Paddy Power and the Football Show, the greatest football partnership since Diofen Heskey.
All right, it's Thursday night's football show. Obviously, football going to be a little bit different, you feel, over the next few weeks. There is live sport going on tonight in the Europa League. Still scoreless between Olympiacos and Wolves at halftime behind closed doors in Greece. But it's a packed house at Ibrox where Rangers are 1-0 down at home against Bayer Leverkusen. Kai Havertz with a penalty. It was a very harsh penalty for a handball against a Rangers player. But Rangers 1-0 down at home, both those games at halftime. Earlier, Manchester United 5-0 winners away in Austria against LASK. Odion Ighalo, in brilliant goal scoring form since his arrival at the club, scored in the first half, and then in the second half there were goals for Daniel James, Juan Mata, Mason Greenwood and Andreas Pereira. A little bit later in the football show we're going to hear from the Sheffield United manager Chris Wilder, who's going to give his thoughts on playing games behind closed doors, and of course the big Irish influence at the club that has absolutely flying in the Premier League this season, Sheffield United. But just an update on what is off from a footballing point of view. So the Slovakian FA have asked UEFA to postpone this month's Euro 2020 playoff with the Republic of Ireland in Bratislava. The game due to be played behind closed doors anyway, but the Slovak government have shut down their airports and their schools. UEFA to hold a video conference on Tuesday to discuss its response to the COVID-19 outbreak and how it relates to their competitions. It's been reported that Euro 2020 could be deferred until next year, allowing the current club competitions to be completed in the summer, because it seems almost impossible that they're going to be completed on schedule. UEFA confirming today that next week's Champions League meetings of Real Madrid and Manchester City and the game between Juventus and Lyon have both been called off. While here at home, the SSE or Tricity Leagues have been shelved until March 29th at the earliest. We had Steve McGuinness from the PFAI on a little bit earlier saying that they hope to have a meeting with UEFA tomorrow and they're hoping for support over the next 3 or 4 weeks and potentially for up to 3 months to get players' wages covered, or could be pretty catastrophic for the league over the next little while. Now, a little bit later than usual, John Giles is with us. Good evening, John.
Evening, Nathan.
Very strange times, obviously, watching these games and talking about matches being called off and postponed, and a lot of uncertainty out there at the moment. The one thing that is going on, it seems, is the Premier League, and is going to continue this weekend. We had the match between Manchester City and Arsenal called off, but it seems as though this weekend's fixtures are going to go ahead. Would you prefer games to be played behind closed doors, or would you prefer the season to be just postponed and start again come the summer?
I think they have to play it behind closed doors, Nathan. It's not a great choice, but I don't think it would be fair on any of the clubs to have it postponed or off until the summer, because, as you know, we've got fixture lists now which are crammed anyway. I can't see how, if they postpone the matches now, that they would get the matches in, Nathan.
Yeah, that is the big difficulty, I guess, that if they do postpone these games, where do they restart and when do they restart? It's remarkable.
We've got the Euro Championships this year, haven't we?
We do, but as I said there, the talk today is that they may well be pushed back until next year.
Yeah, well, you see, there's no end to it. I can't see a solution to it, Nathan, except to play behind closed doors to get the matches done.
It is an unprecedented situation, but like, games have been played behind closed doors before. They've been played behind closed doors tonight. Have you played games where there's been no fans there?
No.
Right.
No.
So you haven't had that experience. It looks like a pretty
surreal
situation.
Never did that, Nathan.
There's obviously a lot going on in the football that did happen this week. Just on a bit of good news, John.
Yeah.
I noticed that your grandson, Craig Giles, has joined Wexford and played for Wexford in the League of Ireland last week. The fourth generation of the Giles family to play League of Ireland football.
Yeah, I believe so. I didn't know that till this week sometime, Nathan. Because my father played... I played, Chris played, that's his dad, and now Craig is playing.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
It makes me feel older and older, Nathan.
he's a defender, 19 years of age, a defender, so we'll keep a close eye on him over the next little while.
Yeah.
Liverpool then, out of the Champions League, beaten 3-2 last night, a dramatic game, a brilliantly entertaining game, two proper football teams it felt like. Had Liverpool any reason to feel hard done by?
I would say so on the general play. I thought Liverpool were outstanding in the 90 minutes, Nathan. I think they should have had the game over. But I must say the Atletico goalkeeper, Oblak, is that his name?
Oblak, yeah.
was really, really outstanding. Kept them in the game. Actually, it was the difference between the two sides over the night, as we saw, because Adrian made a dreadful mistake for the first goal and didn't do too well for the other two goals either. So it was a difference between, and it shows the how good it is to have a goalkeeper really doing his stuff. Against the goalkeeper, it wasn't doing his stuff, Nathan. I thought for the 90 minutes in the match generally that Liverpool were outstanding. Atletico stuck at it, but the goalkeeper kept them in the game. And then when it was Liverpool's turn for their goalkeeper to do his stuff, he didn't do it.
It was still only the last 16 last night, so there was no guarantees if Liverpool had gone through that they'd go on to win the Cup. But that is now two of the last three seasons that their Champions League hopes have been ended because of a goalkeeping issue. You think back to Karius in the final 2 years ago.
Yes. Well, as we know, he cured that problem, really, Klopp, with Alisson. You know, Alisson is a top-class goalkeeper, Nathan. But Adrian isn't. He's not in the same class. So maybe Klopp will have a look around and get a second goalkeeper who is much better than Adrian, because that's what you have to do, Nathan. You know, like, it's very seldom that you can go through the whole season with the goalkeeper not being injured or suspended or whatever it might be. So the second goalkeeper coming in, like with the squad that they have now, Liverpool, and they have the money to do it, I think they should get an outstanding goalkeeper to back up Alisson.
Having a goalkeeper like that in comparison to Alisson, who's just been exceptional all season, and you know, his ability one-on-one is up there with anybody else in world football. Do you think that destabilizes the entire team when he's not there?
Well, it doesn't help, Nathan. You know, I'm not trying to be clever now, but it doesn't help. There's nothing better than having a goalkeeper that you can rely on, that's going to make the saves that he should make and make the saves that he shouldn't be able to get to. In other words, they should be saving your goals rather than giving you goals. You know, and that's what happened last night. I mean, if you look at their goalkeeper, Oblak, again, I'm repeating myself, like, he must have made five or six outstanding saves to keep them in the game, Nathan. And then when Liverpool's goalkeeper was called upon to do not even as much as that, he didn't do it. So it changed. There's an old saying in football, and not just football, goals dictate the game, Nathan. How you play, how you do. You could be winning 1-0. Your goalkeeper makes a bad mistake, and it's a different game altogether. And that's what happened last night, in my opinion. I thought Liverpool were outstanding in the 90 minutes and overall, but the goals were given away far too easily.
Yeah, it must be incredibly frustrating as a player when you put in such a seismic effort and you go in front in extra time and probably should have won it over the 90 minutes, and then to give away such cheap goals that, like, as an outfield player, like, that's something that would just drive you demented.
Oh, drive you mad. I mean, the first goal that put them back in extra time, where he kicked it out, and then the next, I think it was from that goal even, he actually slipped getting to the ball. He just didn't do his stuff, Nathan. That's it. And Liverpool paid the price for it. Now, you've got to give Atletico a bit of credit for coming back into the game. You know, they stuck at it and stuck at it. I mean, I heard Klopp interviewed afterwards, and he was trying to be gracious. He said, "I'm a terrible loser," and he said, "I don't like the way they played." Actually, Michael Owen said it on the telly, who was a Liverpool supporter. But when you're a manager, Nathan, there's not one way of doing it in football to win. You know, Atletico Madrid did what they felt was the right thing to do, and as no good as a manager complaining about how they did it, you know.
Yeah,
you just have to take it on the chin. Now, I know it was difficult for Klopp because his team played very, very well and they didn't win the game. So that is frustrating, to say the least.
Just before we leave the goalkeeping issue, like, when you were with Leeds and you had such a great team, like Gary Sprake, who I think you've spoken about before, was the goalkeeper. Was he that figure that you could trust all the time, that was the backbone of the side?
No. No.
And how did you deal with that as players then? Because that was a team full of quality.
Well, we had to deal with it because, you know, you leave that up to the manager. See, when Gary Sprake came into the team as a young lad, he was an outstanding goalkeeper, Nathan. And then after a few seasons, I think he lost his nerve somewhere along the way. And he did make some mistakes in matches that were vital to us at that time. And it is demoralising as a player when you're playing. Like, we played in the, I think it was 1970 Cup Final at Wembley against Chelsea. And we were winning 1-0 and we were well in control of the game. And one of the Chelsea players had a shot from about 30 yards out, and he should have stopped it, let it go under his body, and it changed the whole game. We finished up after a replay losing it, Nathan. You want goalkeepers to be saving your goals. Like, if you have a goalkeeper that's giving goals away, say you give 5 goals away in the season, right, and he saves 5, that's a 10-goal swing in matches over a season, Nathan. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, instead of saving you 5 goals, for giving you 5 goals away, that's ten goals, which makes the difference between winning and losing. And again, that was in one match last night. The difference last night was their goalkeeper was making the saves, actually made terrific saves, and when Adrian came to do his stuff, he blew it. Liverpool lose the match.
Yeah.
Having dominated it for most of the game.
Like, losing your nerve is an interesting one because, like, Hugo Lloris at Tottenham 3-4 years ago was seen as one of, if not the best goalkeeper in the world. Whereas you look at him now, like, whatever has happened, he's just so error-prone. It seems to be every second game he's making a big mistake.
Yeah, well, he did it during the week, Nathan, as we saw. You know, I think he should have saved the 2 goals against Leipzig. I think he should have saved the 2 of them. And he blew it. And I think it was in the World Cup final, was it? One of the big tournaments there. He made a mistake, and he hasn't been the same goalkeeper since. So it can happen, particularly to goalkeepers, because, like, all the other players are out in the field and they have their teammates to help them if they're having a bad time. Goalkeepers are there on their own, and they either do it or they don't do it. In fact, we've had a bad week of it, Nathan, for goalkeepers, because we saw last week Ederson, who's the best goalkeeper in the Premiership, making 2 big blunders against Manchester United. We had Adrian do it, we had Lloris doing it the other night, so that's 3 goalkeepers doing it in the space of a few days. And it shows the importance, obviously, it's an obvious thing to say, how goalkeepers are important doing what they need to do, and sometimes more, where they actually win your matches, Nathan. They shouldn't be losing your matches.
Just on Liverpool then, and where they go from here, they're a club that you wouldn't expect to stand still in the summer, and that there will be investment. And one of the players that's really come into focus is Mo Salah and his role within the team. And for some reason, despite his brilliant goal-scoring record over the 3 seasons, there's even Liverpool supporters, I think, at times question him and question his performance level. And last night, criticisms that maybe gave the ball away a little bit too much, doesn't choose the right option enough. Like, is if you're picking one of the front 3 that you were to lose and replace with somebody else, would Salah be the one?
It's very hard to pick any of them out. They're all so good, Nathan, at doing different things. I mean, Salah's not playing particularly well at the moment, but he's still the leading goal scorer. You know, I couldn't imagine leaving Salah out of the team, Nathan.
Yeah.
Couldn't imagine leaving any of those 3 out of the team, because, you know, they're going through a long season, and it is a long season in the Premiership, as we know, with all the matches they play. They're not going to be knocking goals in every week. But between the 3 of them, you know, I think we talked about Salah early on in the year. He wasn't scoring, and then he goes on a run. What's he scored? 20 goals or something this season?
Yeah, in all competitions, yeah.
In all competitions. Like, it's not bad for somebody not having a good time, Nathan.
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't. No, you have to live with the guys like that. You have to live with them. I mean, Mane wasn't great last night. He was trying a couple of overhead kicks. I don't know if you remember the overhead kicks in the world. He could have laid it back to one of his teammates at that particular time. But you have to live with these guys. You know, they're not going to do everything right every week.
Yeah.
But definitely Liverpool did, I think, and the general play did enough to win that match last night if the goalkeeper had backed them up.
Things have obviously stalled a little bit for Liverpool over the past few weeks. They'll still go on and win the title over the next couple of weeks. But a month ago we were talking about greatness and one of the great teams of recent times. Like, maybe we all got a little bit carried away. Does what's happened over the last month with Liverpool change how you look at them?
No. I never subscribed to the feeling that they were the best ever. You know, you can't say teams that were having 1 or 2 good seasons as the best ever. When you look back at the teams in the past, you know, you go back to Arsenal, for example, went the whole season unbeaten. Manchester United winning, you know, Champions Leagues and over a period of, 20 years. Liverpool before that, you know, with Souness and Dalglish and Hansen and these guys. You know, I think Liverpool have laid the foundation, or Klopp has laid a foundation at the moment for them to go on to be one of the great teams. But, you know, if, it's very difficult to describe any team in any different areas as the best team ever. Liverpool have done well. They've done tremendously well. And they could well go on in time, Nathan, to be one of the great teams. So I think it was always premature to say that Liverpool are the best team ever. I don't think Klopp ever said that. I think they were saying that last year about Manchester City under Guardiola. You know, the best team ever. I mean, they're certainly the best team in the last couple of seasons because they won the league twice. But to describe them as the best team ever, if you look at them now, they're not having a good season at all in that. So, look, you have to be a really great team to be up there to over a period of time to be regarded as the best team ever.
Tottenham not having a particularly good time of it this season either, and what seems like a typical Tottenham week at the moment. They lose a big game and Jose Mourinho comes out and makes some strange comments, this time basically saying that any of the Leipzig substitutes would walk into the Spurs team at the moment. Like, if you're a Tottenham player and you're hearing those sort of comments, what are you thinking?
But he always puts his foot in my opinion, when things are not going right, Nathan. I mean, I think we spoke about it last week. He had a go at young Parrott there, saying, you know, when he was training with the young boys, he thinks he's too good for them and all. Why say anything like that? You know, there's no need to say it. If Parrott is doing certain things, you talk to him privately, or indeed to any of the players. And at the moment, things are not looking good. It seems to be a typical Mourinho response when things are not going well, Nathan. That's what it looks like, and it usually doesn't get better. So, if I were a Spurs fan, I'd be worried about the situation at the moment.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. That there's been little or no bounce from him coming in. Do you see a situation perhaps where Mourinho doesn't even survive the summer and they go into next season with another new manager?
It could happen. It depends now how he gets on with the players towards the end of the season. Mm. Now, to be fair to him, he's had a lot of injuries, Nathan. You know, but we certainly hear about it. You know. So, and he's gone to upset players. A couple of weeks ago there, and we might have spoken about it last week when they were in one of the matches, he took Dele Alli off and he put Lallana on. Who was the other player? I can't
Lamella.
Think of his name anyway. Put two players on, and he said, I had to put them on. They haven't trained all week. He said, but that's how short I am. I had to take them off. Well, there was a half hour to go, and Dele Alli took off.
Yeah.
Who was fit. You know, he does strange things when he's not winning, Nathan. I think he reacts very, very poorly. Very poorly, and he upsets players, and I think once you lose the players, you never get them back. And that could well happen before the end of the season, because it doesn't look like they're going to finish anywhere near the top of the league.
I don't know if you saw Manchester United this evening, 5-0 winners in their game in Austria against LASK. It's been a good few weeks for United. They won the Manchester Derby at the weekend, and really ever since Bruno Fernandes came into the club, has he been the transformative figure that United need?
Well, he's an improvement. I think he's done well, but I don't think he's been the driving force in what they've done, Nathan. I think it happens when somebody new comes in and they win the matches, and then they do get great credit. I wouldn't put down his signing as the reason that they've done it in recent weeks. I think he has contributed to it, honestly. I keep them saying, like, he looks like Scholes playing, and we might have spoken about this last week. Well, I don't see him as a midfield player at all. I think he's a goal-scoring player coming from midfield. You know, in fact, and I don't want to be too hard on him, but in the match against Everton, I think last week they were well up in the first half. The second half, Everton got on top, and you couldn't see him. And even last week in the Manchester Derby, when Manchester United were on top, it was fine. But when City did get on top for a long spell, and again, he wasn't to be seen. You know, he's not going to influence the game. He's going to be a goal-scoring midfield player, in my opinion, which is, there's no harm to have one of those. It's good. But I don't think he's the influence in the team that people have made him out. It's handy for the press guys, in my opinion, that since he's come in, the results have improved. He has contributed to that. But not as much, in my opinion, as the media have made out.
So, if he's not the sole reason for the improvement, what else has Solskjaer been able to do to get this upturn in fortunes for United?
Well, they've played better, Nathan. You know, I'm not trying to be clever here, but the actual team have played well, and they're capable of winning matches. Now, you know, we're setting the bar very low here, because Solskjaer, or a lot of people were saying, well, they could qualify for Europe if Manchester City are banned from playing in it. But, you know, this is Manchester United, where you'd expect him to be up there challenging.
Yeah.
Now, I know he's fairly new to the job and he's a lot of work to do, and but they should be where they are at the moment. And I, in my opinion, you want Manchester United to do him better than that. But we wait and see, Nathan. It's a long way. You know, and again, when a team loses a few matches that are worse in the world, when they win the few matches that are best in the world, and that changes very, very quickly.
I think
so they're on a good run at the moment, definitely. Yeah.
From a Manchester City point of view, like, we spoke a lot earlier in the season about a particular goal they conceded against Newcastle where they switched off, and the general sloppiness. Like, is that what the problem in that Manchester derby was again, when you look at that first goal that United scored and the free kick that Fernandes was able to lob over the top from Martial, that they just haven't been switched on at crucial moments this season?
No, that was very poor defending. But you have to look at the goalkeeper as well, Nathan. Edison is the best goalkeeper, I think, in the Premiership. He was badly at fault for the two goals. You know, that's a 2-0 win for Manchester United, where the goalkeepers let them down. Now, I think Manchester United in the first half deserved to be in front. In the second half, City came at them in a big way. But the goalkeeper blew it, ultimately. And Manchester United played well. They probably deserved to win the match on the night. But if the goalkeeper's given two goals away, then there's no way you're going to be winning matches. And that's what happened. But Manchester United have improved. There's no doubt about that. But and it was a good free kick to put him in, and it was Aguero actually who was nearest the player who made it, the Martial, which is bad defending. There's no doubt about that. But ultimately, you want your goalkeeper. That's why defenders or any player to make the mistake. The goalkeeper, if he saves it, which he should have done, nobody'd even remember that.
Yeah. I was over at Stamford Bridge on Sunday for Chelsea against Everton. Obviously, Chelsea demolished them. And we've spoken a lot about Billy Gilmore last week. He lived up to the hype on Sunday, I think.
He's very good, Nathan. He's the best young player. I think, did we speak about him last week?
Yeah, we spoke, yeah.
Yeah, he's the, well, again, I'd repeat myself. He's the best young player I've seen playing in the midfield for a long time. I think he is a genuine midfield player. And I think we named a few names last week of players playing in the middle of the field, like Fabinho, Jorginho, Rodri, like, these are all big signing players, and I think none of them are trying to do, or maybe not even capable of doing, what this kid is doing as a midfield player. You know, you've often heard me talking about positional sense, Nathan.
Yeah, to have that at 18, the way he seems to have it.
Yeah, and he's been encouraged to do it, which is good from Chelsea's point of view, whether it's Lampard or anybody who was there before him. They're not stopping him from doing. I've known coaches that with this kid doing what he's doing, they'd actually stop him from doing it, saying, you're too deep, we want you up there scoring goals. You know, he's been allowed to do it. Obviously, he's been encouraged to do it. I think his instinct is to do it, which is to get in a position to receive the ball in the right positions to link back to front. That's what ultimately a midfield player is for. And what he has got in his locket, from right luck of what I can see, Nathan, he can go past his opposing midfield players. You don't see any of the leading midfield players, supposedly midfield players, doing that. And in football, in my experience, once you go past your opposing midfield player, now you're really opening up the defence, the opposition defence. But you see a lot of the lads playing, they're getting the ball, don't turn on it, and if there's a 50-50 chance of taking it forward, turning on it, or giving it back to the fullback, they're giving it back to the fullback.
Yeah, Chelsea's
and he's a breath of fresh air in my eyes to see him turning on the ball, taking on the opposition, picking out the right passes. He's only 18, and he's the best I've seen for a long time.
That Chelsea team in general on Sunday were a bit of a breath of fresh air, and they've been difficult to sum up this season. They've been very inconsistent, but they've had a lot of injuries. And you look at the team that played on Sunday; they were missing probably their first choice midfield with Kante out, Jorginho out, Kovacic out, they're missing Tammy Abraham up front, yet still they're able to go out and play that style of football. Like, does Lampard deserve a lot of credit for what Chelsea have done this season?
Yeah, I think he's done really well. But I think if they were all fit, I'd still have this kid in. There's none of them. Well, Kante is great. Mm. And I think Kante playing in the middle of the field with this kid would be terrific. But to be honest, at the moment, he'd be my first pick to go into midfield, because he's doing things now that even Kante doesn't do. which is to link up the back to front and actually go past players. Mm. Kante is brilliant at what he does. He covers the ground well, and I think he'd complement him. But Gilmore is the first in the Premiership, never mind in Chelsea, is doing in the position. You often hear me talking about positional sense, Nathan. Positional sense is 90% part of a game, especially as a midfield player. In other words, to be in the right position to receive the ball in space. This kid is able to do that because he sees the position to go to and he's in it. And in other words, if you don't have that, you're not going to get the ball. Hmm. And he's able to do that. And I don't see Jorginho or the others doing that. Even when they get it, they're not capable of going past the opposition. Or if they are, I haven't seen it. Where this kid can do it and then he picks out the right passes.
John, great stuff as always. We'll talk to you next Thursday.
Thanks, Nathan.
John Giles there as always. Latest scores in the Europa League. There has just been a second goal for Bayer Leverkusen against Rangers. Aaron Giez with the second goal after Havertz had scored from the penalty spot in the first half. So there's 69 minutes gone at Ibrox in that Europa League last 16 first leg. And it's Rangers 0, Bayer Leverkusen 2. And in Greece, behind closed doors in Greece, it is Olympiacos 1, Wolves 1. Olympiacos reduced to 10 men before the half-hour mark when Semedo was sent off. But they went in front 10 minutes after half-time. El Arabi with the goal. But just in the past couple of moments, Wolves have got an equaliser and an away goal. Pedro Neto scoring for Wolves there. So it is 1-1 in Greece. And in the other game that's currently ongoing, it is 1-1 between Wolfsburg and Shakhtar Donetsk. Earlier, Manchester United 5-0 winners away at LASK. Istanbul 1-0 winners at home to Copenhagen. And Eintracht Frankfurt surprisingly beaten 3-0 at home against Basel. 53106 is the text number. Up next, we're going to be talking to one of the real success stories of the Premier League season. Chris Wilder, the Sheffield United manager, will join us.
Paddy Power and the Football Show. The greatest football partnership since Geoffrey Heskey.
All right, I'm delighted to be joined on the line by the Sheffield United manager, Chris Wilder. Afternoon, Chris.
Afternoon, Nathan.
Brilliant to talk to you. It's been a pretty remarkable season so far for Sheffield United. And obviously, from an Irish point of view, we've all had a keen interest with so many Irish players featuring week in, week out. We might get into that in a moment, but obviously everybody at the moment is only talking about one thing, and that is the coronavirus and its effect on sport. How's that affecting you at Sheffield United at the moment? Are you just continuing as normal, or have you had to change a few things around?
Well, no, we have regular updates from our medical team, and the chief exec is in dialogue and conversation with the Premier League and taking our lead off them, really. But obviously, devastating, you know, not just from a sporting point of view, but from a health point of view as well. That what's happening around the world and how it's affecting everybody. So these things happen, and we have to adjust and make sure we do what we need to do.
And it is evolving so quickly. Like this time last week, I think people were sort of half joking about maybe Liverpool not having a chance to win the title, and now we feel as though we're very much in a situation where we can't be that far away from games being played behind closed doors or leagues being postponed completely, as we've seen in Serie A. Where do you stand on what might happen? Would you prefer games to continue behind closed doors, or do you think actually if games can't continue the way they have at the start of the season, we should just press pause for a few months and restart in the summer and rejig the entire calendar?
Yeah, I'm a big believer that, you know, without the supporters, the game's nothing really. Of course, administrators, players and managers and officials are all part and parcel of the game, but the biggest players are the supporters, and the excitement and the enthusiasm and the desire and the commitment that they bring to the game is the biggest thing. So for me, I'd be deeply disappointed if games get played behind closed doors. If that's the case, then we'll adhere to that. But for me, the last thing that I want to do is play in front of an empty stadium. Mm. I think it loses everything for everybody.
There's obviously business ramifications for every business around the world because of this crisis. But because of your background, Chris, in non-league football, like trying to play games behind closed doors for teams in League 1, League 2, non-league, so much of their revenue is caught up in having people come through the doors. Like, there's going to be a crisis, you feel, in football finances over this. Is this a moment where Premier League clubs need to step up and try and support, or I don't know if there's anything Premier League clubs can do in this sort of situation?
Well, I'm not so sure as well. I mean, every level is going to be hit, and you feel so much for the likes of League One and League Two clubs and non-league clubs, of course, because you know they're not backed by television money and big sponsorship deals. You know, there's a lot of honest, hard, hard-working people that keeping clubs going. And supporters, whether you know they're buying a program or a pint, or the local businesses around the ground, and you're right, huge ramifications and very very scary, really, what can happen. So you feel for everybody in the game. It's not like any other country. You know, 92 professional football clubs, and even going deeper into that in terms of the non-league pyramid. So hopefully everybody can come out of this unscathed, but you feel that there might be a few victims of what is going on with the world's health.
To look at the football side of things, while we still can and while we should be talking about it, like, it's been a most remarkable season for Sheffield United. To be heading into the final few matches, seventh place, 6 points behind a Champions League spot, and who knows what happens with Manchester City, maybe fifth place will get in. Is this beyond your wildest dreams, or actually when you were getting promoted and you looked at the squad you had last summer, did you think, you know what, we could do something?
Well, you go into every season with hope and enthusiasm. You know, we didn't know what we were coming into. There was only Phil Jagielka really with Premier League experience. So, you know, you just try and tackle the next games in front of you, and the players had to raise their standards at the start of the season going into summer pre-season. We didn't really take a wrecking ball to the way we played. We had to tweak and we had to change a few things. We brought a few players in. And then we relied on the Irish, and they've got us through it. If we're totally honest,
yeah. You're saying all the right things, Chris. You're saying all the right things. Talk to us about them then. Maybe individually first. Firstly, Enda Stevens obviously is a bit of an injury concern at the moment. When do you expect him back?
Yeah, well, he's going to be out for we've had the initial scan, and he says up to 4 weeks. So nice. Obviously. So he impinges with the national side, which is deeply disappointing, because I know how much Ender relishes the opportunity of pulling on that famous shirt, and we've got a great relationship with Mick McCarthy as well. So, you know, Ender's form has been brilliant in the Premier League, and I think it's been outstanding for his country as well. So he's having a great season. So to lose him, from our point of view, is disappointing. We will, because we want him to play for the national side, do as much as we possibly can to get him in a situation that he might be okay for the internationals. But I think everybody recognises that it's going to be touch and go for the game.
Yes, obviously hugely disappointing from an Irish point of view and from a Sheffield United point of view, because he's been one, if not the outstanding left back in the Premier League this season. And he's like a lot of your players who've come through the ranks, who haven't had it easy along the way. When you're signing players, when you're looking to bring players into the club, like, how much of it is to do with their character, and how do you go about trying to find out about players' characters? You can see their skill on the pitch, but how do you go about doing that sort of behind the scenes detail so you know you're getting the right kind of guy in?
Yeah, networking, talking to people that we trust and respect. You know, you look at the David McGoldrick situation. We all knew that he was a really talented player. We knew that he had a few issues with injuries, but we spoke to Mick regarding him and other people that worked with him. So, yeah, we'll dig deep. But, you know, first impressions are big as well from our point of view. And getting the right people in, just as much as being really good footballers, you know, can they work in the environment that we have here at Sheffield United, and all the boys, I think, just is great credit to their characters as well as being really good players. We all know they've all had to up the game, but you know, everybody has to start from somewhere. And there's a lot of fantastic players playing the top end of the Premier League that, you know, started their journey in leagues that they wouldn't have expected to get to. An opportunity for the players, and one that they have taken and grasped, and I'm delighted for them.
Dave McGoldrick, obviously a lot of focus has been on his lack of goals, but you talk to teammates for Club Our Country and they all just rave about his ability, and like, you just have to watch Sheffield United, that when he drops deep, he picks up the ball, five or six other things all seem to click into place in things off the training ground that end up resulting in a goal for somebody else. Do you have to do much work with him at this stage of the season when he hasn't got a Premier League goal mentally, just to keep him in the right frame of mind, or is he somebody who's just generally very positive anyways?
No, he's a positive boy. I think we were all delighted when he scored for the national side as well. Mm. And you saw the reaction of the supporters when he's playing for his country. And it's similar to when he's playing for us. He's a very, very popular boy in the changing room. I and the coaching staff know what he brings to us as a team and how he makes us click and connect. He has been... You know, deeply disappointed that he's not scored, Premier League goal. But it's not for the want of trying. He's very brave. He gets into those positions. He's as they all are. They're quite streaky. You know, he went on a run last year for us. He ended up getting 10. So we're not expecting him to get 10 between now and the end of the season. But I'm sure there's some goals in him. I've got to look at the bigger picture, how well my team are playing, and when David is in it, we invariably do play well, and I'm sure that's the same opinion and view when he plays for the Republic.
The other Irish player, of course, is John Egan, who's been a bit of a rock for you in that three-man defence. How aware are you of John Egan's background? And he's very much from Gaelic football royalty here in Ireland.
Yeah, I know a lot about it. He's obviously late father and the impact that he had on the sport and how well thought of he was. So big shoes to fill, but John's certainly going a long way to filling those, obviously in a different sport. But yeah, again, an outstanding character, an outstanding man, brave, one that's taken to the division and been brilliant for myself off the pitch and on the pitch. And, he so consistent, produces performances week in, week out, and such a great guy, humble boy, and delighted that he's enjoying his time with Sheffield United and producing the goods for us. And I'm sure he'll have a long and successful career for his country, another one that he's enormously proud. I see it, I know it, to play for his country. And you sometimes see players not being too bothered about, you know, making the journey over. But, you know, the likes of Dave McGoldrick, Ender Stevens, John Egan, they're desperate to do well for the club and desperate to do well for the country.
On a week like this, when you're building up to another big Premier League game and a trip to St James's Park, and you are so close to potentially European football or even Champions League football, are you talking to the players about that like this could be a once in a lifetime opportunity to go out and grasp it, or do you not want to put that pressure on their shoulders?
Yeah, they know it. They know the publicity that the Premier League gets. It's there. It's always there. It's with them. They're ambitious. They're driving it on themselves. You know, now and again we drop a couple of things into them, but you know, they're the masters of their own destiny, to say. You know, they're the ones know that where they can take their careers to and the experiences they can have. And there's no motivation needed as far as I'm concerned. You know, I need to, as a manager, pick the right team, making sure that, you know, Monday to Friday is structured and organised and we do the appropriate work on the opposition. And then it's over to us. And if we're good enough, we'll achieve. And if we fall short, it certainly won't be for the want of application and commitment.
How structured are you during the week? Are you a name the team on a Tuesday and get that 11 on the training ground again and again and again? I know you don't make huge changes week in, week out anyways, but do you want a very structured training session? Because the way you play, as I say, it seems to be a lot of moving parts that generally seem to click into place at the right time. Is it a very intense training session?
Yeah, it is. It's hugely important. It's Monday to Friday. There's different parts of the week, especially earlier in the week, that are more physical and conditioning stuff to make us play at the tempo and the intensity what the Premier League is. And then, and as you can imagine, you can't keep that up all week. You have to look to start preparing, which we do on a Monday, but you know, really Thursday is the big day, name the side, Everybody knows where they are. Everybody knows the jobs, roles and responsibilities. Players that aren't playing have that ability to get over that disappointment and full steam ahead for the weekend. But there is a lot of freedom in our play, but as you can imagine from a promoted side, we have to be structured and organised, which obviously we've done that this year.
How different is that intensity compared to last season? Because look, everybody talks about the Championship has been the toughest league in the world because it's such a slog with 46 games, it's Tuesday, it's Saturday, and you want to get to an intensity there. But the quality in the Premier League, was there ever any, when you were thinking last summer about whether to stick or twist in terms of game plans, was there ever any concern of whether that intensity would be enough in the Premier League? Did you have to change things to make sure the intensity was able for the Premier League?
Yeah, tactically. We changed the way we played. We played with two midfield players, a ten and two nines. Now we're playing with three midfield players and two centre forwards. So, from a tactical point of view, we had to up our game and change a couple of bits. And from the work, I think the players recognised and realised that they would really have to put the hard yards in the gym, on the training ground, the levels that they need to get to for them to survive week in, week out in the Premier League. The high intensity runs and the intensity of the amount of distance they covered is ridiculous. The Championship is a brilliant league. Don't get me wrong. Everything you said about it, 46 games, ruthless, relentless. Mm. You know, a real slog that you have to be at your best, close to your best week in, week out. You have to be that in the Premier League, but all the other physical bits and from a mentality point of view. You know, they've gone through the roof.
The environment side of things that you touched about earlier on the training pitch, that'll probably face a big test, I imagine, this summer because of the money that's coming Sheffield United's way. You're probably going to be operating in a slightly different market than you would have been 12 months ago in terms of trying to get the right character. You want to get the talent, you want to bring in better players, but to make sure that they can fit into that right environment. Have you thought much about that, about how you make sure that you keep the ethos of what you brought to the club while also bringing quality players in?
Always, it's hugely important to us. You know, we've got great pride in the way that the players handle themselves off the pitch and on it out there together. Now they leave everything out there, but of course you're trying to up the quality always. I think in the summer there'll be, you know, it'll be quality people that we'll be bringing in. I don't expect us to make huge changes, but you know, you can't sit still. You always have to have a plan. Obviously short, medium and long term. Short, winning the game of football on a Saturday, medium and long term obviously involves planning, involves recruitment, involves improvement, and we can't, you know, sit back and pat ourselves on the back and say we've had a decent season. We're always after more. We always have to raise the bar and challenge the players and challenge the football club to improve, and I think that's hugely important to us.
I was listening to a really interesting piece you did with Colin Murray a while back, where you were talking about a relationship with Alex Ferguson and how Ferguson was very good to you at times and you could bring teams to train at Carrington. And he was asking about what you learned from Ferguson, and you said there's a football aspect that you wouldn't believe. It's not technical or tactical. It's not really a mentality thing. It's another part of the game. What other part of the game is it? If it's not technical, tactical or mentality, what is it that you learned from Ferguson?
I didn't tell him. I'm not going to tell you. No, it's just something really simplistic, really. But I've got a huge amount of respect for Alex. You know, for him to take time out as he has done, not just in my early career, but a lot of other young managers in terms of advice and experience that he's had to pass that on. I just think that just shows. An enormous amount of respect he has for everybody and what a good guy he is. And yeah, you know, his principles of his team in that golden era for Manchester United were, you know, there was some superstars in there and there was a lot of stuff happening, but there was a lot of basic stuff happening as well that he wouldn't compromise on, and that was important to him. And obviously he was dealing with world-class players, with millionaires, and... he had to make sure that, you know, the things that he stood for and what he represented were not compromised, and I think that's really important to, for anybody who's trying to be successful.
that not compromising side of it, I'd imagine, is very important to you. I know you spoke about a WhatsApp group that maybe a lot of criticism gets thrown into it to try and spark a bit of a reaction. And like, there's been very little criticism of you this year, but there was some bizarre criticism, I remember, around the Liverpool game around New Year, where Sheffield United trained in Stanley Park before the game. And this weird criticism of, it's a very English manager thing. You know, you wouldn't see continental managers training in the shadow of this stadium almost in all of it, whereas you were very much like, this is what you do before every game. Like, that sort of strange criticism that an English manager would get for sticking to their principles. That side of things, did it surprise you?
Yeah, it sometimes frustrates you because, you know, you have values and principles and everybody does, regardless of the nationality. There's different ways of going about it. But our boys didn't want to sit in it. I didn't want our players sitting in an hotel all day thinking about the game, and get them out and get them some fresh air. And that for me was an obvious one. We were a million miles away. Stanley Park is an iconic park that separates two brilliant football clubs. We didn't get the result that we wanted, and maybe the performance, so I'm not sure how much it worked. But, you know, I'd do the same anywhere I went. And I don't look at it from a nationality point of view. I just thought that was the right thing for us to do on the morning of a game. And you know, I don't regret it. Listen, the thing about the Premier League is everybody has an opinion on you, and you have to be able to deal with that and accept it at times. Sometimes privately it riles you, and you scratch your head and you wonder what they're on about. I think there's quite a lot of lazy journalism as well out there, but you know, a lot of it, you know, with the coverage that the Championship gets and the Premier League, the good ones and the people that know the game and views are and opinions are respected. I think are respecting us as a good side in and out of possession and what we've achieved so far. I think, you know, it's been applauded, but from our point of view, there's more in the season, and we still want more out of this season.
Yeah, Chris, it's been great to talk to you. You've been very good with your time. It sounds like you're loving life at the moment.
Yeah, life's good. Well, life's great, isn't it? You know, regardless of what, you know, I'm a professional football manager working in the industry that I've worked in since I was 14, 16, and still going at 52. So, yeah, it changes along the way, and you have some lows and you have some highs, but at the moment, it's a good period. And you just have to be consistent with your attitude right the way through. But no, it's great, great to be involved in the Premier League. Great to be involved in football, and hopefully I've got a little bit left in the tank coming up in the future years.
All right, Chris. Best of luck for the rest of the season, then.
Cheers, Nathan.
Keep giving those Irish boys a game.
I will do. Take care, mate.
Cheers. Thanks, Chris.
Cheers. Ta-da.
Paddy Power and the Football Show, the greatest football partnership since Diolfin Heskey.